Welcome to our third episode of Reading Deeply, Fueling the Brain, a podcast where we explore the concepts from the text, Know Better, Do Better, Comprehension, by Meredith and David Libin. I'm Erin Little, and I'm joined by my fellow instructional coach, Kate Rosenthal. Today, we are exploring the third chapter of the text, Morphology and Etymology, the Structure and Origin of Words, where we dig into the concept of morphemes and etymology, helping students to realize the logical structure of much of the English language. We will also be joined by Peter Bowers, who will be sharing his thoughts and experiences on this topic. At some point during this episode, we will be announcing a secret word. Make sure you listen for it, and when you hear it, send it in an email to Tanya Vince for a chance to win a prize in our monthly draw.
When I was reading this chapter, I was reminded of a discussion that came up in my grade 4 or 5 class last year. We were working on a measurement chapter for math, and one of my students made the connection between the words centimeter and century. This turned part of our math lesson into a mini lesson on morphology, as we listed other words with the base cent, including centipede, percent, and the word cent. I remember seeing the light bulbs turn on above my students' heads as they made the connection that all of these words were related to the number 100 in one way or another. Talk about a teachable moment.
I remember discovering Dr. Peter Bowers' book, Teaching How the Written Word Works, in the Teacher Resource Library the year I was teaching at Green School in Bali, Indonesia. Peter is a Canadian and a leader in morphology instruction. I found the book fascinating and immediately started to implement word inquiry in my classroom there. The student body is international, with students speaking a variety of first languages. I vividly remember studying the word science and having a student whose first language is Italian realize that the base is the same in Italian and means knowledge. This was a light bulb moment for her and for me. We further investigated using the online etymology dictionary called EtymOnline and discovered that the word science came to English from Old French and before that from Latin. We found related words like scientist and scientific, but also words like conscious, conscience, omniscience, and prescient. This really blew our minds. All those words share the same bound base, SCI. Actually, SC, as I is a connecting vowel, but more on that later. With other bases and affixes. This started my deep dive into morphology. I led a TLLP about morphology and was lucky enough to study with some experts.
This ties so perfectly into the morphology work happening in grades 3 to 6 classrooms across our board. I visited several classrooms and have seen the Bug Club morphology program in action. It's really amazing to see the students in these classrooms learn about morphology and put it into action by listing words with similar prefixes, suffixes, and root words. I co-taught a lesson where students learned the meaning of a morpheme. It was rewarding to watch them demonstrate that they understood that the letters ing hold meaning even though it isn't a proper word. By the end of the lesson, student recognized that the word snowballs has three morphemes, snow, ball, and the S, which indicates more than one. This program is going to do great things for our students over the long term.
Understanding the meanings of morphemes and how they are put together to make words is an important piece of the comprehension puzzle. During my TLLP about morphology, I took a 5-day course with Dr. Peter Bowers, who has done a lot of research on morphology study and is a leading instructor for teachers and tutors. He would also zoom into my classroom and do morphology investigations with my class.
What kinds of things has he researched regarding morphology?
Dr. Bowers and his brother conducted research and also reviewed research, which demonstrates that morphological instruction is beneficial for word reading, spelling, vocabulary, grapheme-phoneme correspondence, and reading comprehension, and is particularly beneficial for younger and less able learners. English is the morphophonemic language, with morphemes being as important as phonemes. If teachers are looking for more information, they can start with Pete's website, WordWorks Literacy Center. I learned that when we investigated words using structured word inquiry, students were very engaged in the process and excited about word meaning and spelling. Once students know a wide range of morphemes, they can easily figure out the meaning of new words containing those morphemes.
Let's take a look at an example. In Bug Club Morphology, Kit D, the focus is on the bound base fract, F-R-A-C-T. Listeners, what words can you think of that have this base?
Well, Kate, I can think of fraction, fracture, infraction, refract.
Let's take a look at fraction. What is the sense or meaning of that word?
Well, I know that a fraction is a number broken into smaller parts. So the sense would be to break. And thinking about fracture, that also makes sense. When something fractures, it breaks. So now I'm wondering about infraction and refract. With refraction, I think it might be about light being broken. I'm not entirely sure.
Well, let's make an analytic word sum. R-E plus F-R-A-C-T plus I-O-N is rewritten as refraction. I can see it has the prefix R-E and the suffix I-O-N. When I think of the prefix R-E, I think of words like redo or reread, which means to do something again. So I'm wondering if refraction is something broken again? We can investigate a little further by using the website Edom Online. Let's take a look. Edom Online shows me that the prefix R-E can mean back or to back up. When placed in front of F-R-A-C-T, they spell refract, which means to bend or break back the natural course of light, sound, or heat. The secret word is morpheme. Erin, you mentioned earlier that you led a TLLP about morphology, so I know you've done lots of work around this in your classroom. We've all taught the strategy of having readers skipped over an unfamiliar word in hopes that the context of the sentence will help them to solve the unfamiliar word. Morphology and etymology have us approaching unfamiliar words differently. Have you had any experiences in your classroom where students have solved an unfamiliar word with these strategies?
I definitely have, Kate. In my class, we would collect words from text we were reading, especially from science and social studies texts. We recorded these words on chart paper and would investigate several words a week. We used the four questions from structured word inquiry based on Peter Bauer's work. In a nutshell, we would use Edom Online to find the base and affixes, and we would construct word sums and word matrices like you see in Bug Club Morphology. The only difference is we did it all ourselves as a class. Once we investigated a word, the base and the affixes would go up on our word wall. We would also put any new graphemes up on our word wall. Students were very engaged in this process because they chose the words, and they soon realized that once they understood the meaning of a base, it helped them to understand new words that shared the base. More information about this process can be found in the resources document. Now I'd like to introduce our guest, Dr. Peter Bauers. Dr. Peter Bauers, PhD, is a researcher, author, educator, and founder of WordWorks Literacy Center. His vocabulary intervention introduced the phrase structured word inquiry, SWI, and the morphology as a binding agent theory. He has published widely on SWI and the effects of morphology instruction, with a particular emphasis on explicit teaching of how morphology informs grapheme-phoneme choice. It's great to see you again, Pete, and welcome. What is your understanding of how the study of morphology impacts reading comprehension?
Morphology and reading comprehension are definitely considered to be very related in the literacy research. The most direct way people have looked at morphology is for vocabulary learning, which where it seems so obvious that it would be connected, because you obviously can't learn every word. You can't be taught every word. So if you can be taught how to recognize familiar bits in unfamiliar words, and I mean familiar meaningful bits, right? So you mentioned earlier there's a base R-E-P-T that is in a word like rupture and interrupt and corruption and all that. And in all of those words, that R-E-P-T has this sense of burst or break. Now you can trace that to the etymology that comes from a Latin root. But if I learn that disrupt is to break something that's going on, and eruption is a mountain that's bursting and breaking, and corruption is a broken system, once you've bound that R-U-P-T, and I think of it as a spelling meaning correspondence, wherever that R-U-P-T is, if it's a morpheme in a word, it brings that meaning to it. And so you don't have to, and the study that we did that introduced structured word inquiry showed exactly this. We focus on the vocabulary, and what we found is when we taught with these matrices and word sums that we can talk about, which is a way of showing related words in a family that share the same base. And R-E-P-T is not a word, but it is a base. It's called a bound base because it doesn't act as a word on its own, but it needs at least to be bound to at least one other morpheme base or affix to make a word. So you can have bankrupt. Now, bankrupt, the B-A-N-K is a base. It's a free base. It can be a word on its own. I'm going to go change my money at the bank. But if your bank goes bankrupt, you broke the bank. It's done. And so the idea for vocabulary learning is that if you teach how that works, especially in English, where the pronunciation of that morpheme shifts, right? When I say rupture, the R-E-B-T is pronounced rupsh. And so it's hard from the phonology side to make the connection, but thankfully the R-E-P-T is there. And what we found in our study, we taught grade 4 or 5 kids, compared it to typical instruction. And what we found is they were exposed to like 420 words over the 20 sessions, but we didn't teach them all directly. But what kids were better at defining words that I never taught them, as long as that word had a base that they were taught. So I never taught the word insignificance, but that base is in the word sign and signing and designate and signature. And so what we found at the end of the study is that kids were better able to define words that they were never exposed to, as long as they had been taught the base and how it works in the system.
That makes so much sense. And I know from my own experience of doing SWI in the classroom, that it's really motivating for students when they can understand a new word because they already understand the morphemes. I've heard you speak about how motivating understanding is as well. What we often present as irregular sight words really do make sense once students understand the structure. Can you speak to that point?
You know, a sight word is the bound spelling, pronunciation, meaning of the word, so we're all trying to do that. So I'm arguing that the way we teach, we put kids in the position of memorizing things that they couldn't understand if we taught it. So a common example, the word do and does, if we just think does on its own, the grapheme phonical responses aren't what we expect. But if you link the word does to its base, spelled D-O, but pronounced do and doing, and then in the word do, but duh and does, what we're doing is we're giving you a spelling meaning correspondence, the D and the O, to link to explain the grapheme phoneme correspondences. And the key is the pronunciation of morphemes can shift across words, but the spelling tends to be the same to give us that signal. So we have two kinds of spelling meaning correspondences. There's ones that come from morphology, so like do and does, sign and signal, heal and health. We know which is which because the spelling favors consistent spelling of meaning over consistent representation of the pronunciation. But we don't teach that. And if we teach the grapheme phoneme correspondence without the morphology, then all of a sudden, how do you know how to spell which word? So one way to get spelling meaning correspondence is from morphology. So if once you find the base, the D-O, however I pronounce it, it means do in do and does. Now, and bin, it's not a B-E-E-N, no, it's a B-E, I will be there, I have been there. It's just a B-E and an E-N. Now, those are spelling meaning correspondence from morphology. From etymology, there's a couple that have snuck in. The W in two, many people recognize, for two things, that W after the T is a signal of twice, twin, 20. So I can remember that the T-W-O-2 is for the number two, not the I went to school or I like ice cream too. So it's separating homophones, potential homophones from other words, which is spelling is doing that. And it's linking it to twice 20. The W in two is not associated with any pronunciation, but that's not irregular. That's a thing graphemes can do. It's just marking meaning. Now, another word that people say is irregular is the word your, like your house is beautiful. Now, I'm curious, Aaron, if you think of the word your, can you think of other words that might be related to your that would help you with the spelling of your?
Our?
Our house is beautiful, your house is beautiful, and you. We have the Y-O-U letters. It's not a morpheme in your. There's no R suffix. But connections and meaning between words show spelling meaning correspondence. That's etymology. The W in two linked out helps you see, that's the T-W-O meaning spelling correspondence to two things. The Y-O-U being in YOUR is easier for me to build a sight word for if I think about our, which isn't pronounced the same at all, but the OUR. It's not a, it's, it is a word on its own, our, it's a base, but it's not a base in your, but the spelling is there. Same with I hear you. How do I know which here spelling to use? Well, I'm going to use the one with the E-A-R in it that links to the thing with which you hear. So if we give kids access to always looking for meaning cues as a habit of mind, and we're having them look at both meaning from etymological connections and morphological connections, that is going to give kids leverage to understand words that they do not have otherwise. And if you have kids with phonological deficits, orthographic memory deficits, we got to give them every leverage we can that doesn't depend on their weakness. If you can, you have no problems with critical thinking and problem solving and all that. If you're dyslexic, that's not a condition of just being dyslexic. So we, you just, I picked that one, Aaron, because I didn't think you probably had heard that one, but you didn't have to have been taught that one. Because of the way you've been looking at words, you could just come up with, oh, maybe our. And right there, if you did that with a kid, even if it turned out not to be true, which I think it is, you've already bound, and this is the key, a sight word, what everybody wants to build so that you can just start to read, is the bound spelling, pronunciation, and meanings of words. What we are doing in structured word inquiry is ensuring that meaning is bound in there all the time. And that's not bound in there if we just teach grapheme phoneme correspondences without reference to how they're constrained and explained by morphology and etymology.
On behalf of DSB1, thank you, Dr. Bowers, for joining us today and sharing your insight about this fascinating topic. To our listeners, thanks for joining us on Reading Deeply, Fueling the Brain. Don't forget to email the secret word to Tanya for a chance to win this month's prize. We'll see you next time, where we'll continue to explore new ways to enrich our teaching and deepen our students' learning. Until then, keep fueling those reading brains.